This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
It is the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that started way back in 1979 and still going in 2025. From the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito on a Saturday morning, the sun is shining. Looking forward to another day of local programming on the WRMJ airwaves. I'm Jim Taylor. Ty Taylor is alongside. I saw you dubbed it, I think it was perfectly, last night on social media, a family reunion. So what was the environment like with Coach Andy Say and Toby Whiteman coaching against their former kids last night?
Yeah, it was weird. It was definitely a unique feel, and that's something that Coach Say talked about in our pregame interview, as he said, you know, kind of preparing for it, was where he told kind of a funny story where he got some film on Rockridge from Alex Johnson to scout him. He's like, this just, and he said, Coach Johnson said it felt like almost sacrilegious where he's giving Andy Say film to scout Rockridge. It was a really strange, you know, and for obviously Coach Say, he coached those kids, you know, what, 2 years ago when they went down to state. And I didn't realize this, but he said too that like he was a student teacher in Caleb Kunico's third grade class, Coach Say was.
What a story.
Like he said, you know, he's known those kids all since they were third graders. So it was really kind of strange for him to like put a scouting report together against Landon Bull and Caleb Kunico and Landon Wheatley. But I mean, UT, they're impressive and they're super young. I was talking about it last night during our broadcast. They only have one senior that really plays any minutes. They play virtually basically an 8-man rotation. Seven of them are going to be returning next year, and they just play like a typical, like Andy Say and Toby Whiteman team. They're really strong defensively. They take care of the ball, and you know they're really tough to score on. So they were kind of fun to get to watch, and that's a good team. I know, I mean, they're 3-1 in the Big Six, I think now 11-4 overall, and the one loss in the conference is Quincy, and they were winning that game at halftime, weren't they?
Yeah, it was
Quincy.
Close, and yeah. they hung tough through
like three quarters.
Yeah, and then Quincy kind of put the pedal to the metal in the fourth quarter. I thought it was also great, you know, the other Rockridge connection to that game yesterday is the superintendent of United Township High School is a Rockridge grad, I think 89 or 88, and his kid is a sophomore on the team. And I went up to watch the Quincy game a couple weeks ago in the Big Six, and he came up to me and said, oh man, WRMJ, and I just thought it was awesome. And then I was thinking too last night, who's the only radio station to broadcast a game where Coach Say was the head coach at Galva, right, the head coach at Rockridge, and now the head coach at UT? We got the trifecta, because a lot of people forget he spent the 1 year at Galva, because I remember the one time we broadcast their game, Mirko was playing at Galva, and he was the coach of the Ingles kid, right? The
yeah, really good I was player. A sophomore that year. Yeah. He wore like
suit and he had glasses. A fancy suit, yeah, man. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. So I thought that was awesome. And then, of course, like you said, how they play defense. But then I was impressed a couple weeks ago when they played Quincy with kind of the design sets they run to get baskets or set up great plays.
So, yeah, their baseline out-of-bounds plays are really good, I think. I mean, they got good looks out of those all day. And I really like that low post player they have, Octavius Hickman. He's kind of got like a bigger body, but he's really like deceivingly athletic and quick, and he's a terrific passer out of the post. He's a kind of similar player, not quite the athlete that Landon Bull is, but he kind of reminds me of Bull the way he's able to. He can step out and shoot a little bit. He can handle the ball a little bit, but his passing is really impressive out of the post. So they're a solid team, and they're going to be, I mean, really good next year, I think. They'll try to compete, I think, for around maybe the Big Six title next year with all the talent they have back.
And I think, too, the other thing about, you know, kind of following the Western Big Six a little bit and being at the venues, the Panther Den is kind of an unheralded place to play.
Heralded.
Unheralded, yeah. Whatever you want to say. That's my Hampton, Illinois dialect,
right.
Which is part of the United Township High School School District.
By the way, before you make this point, I do want to note this. I don't think I told you this. I guess I haven't told you this yet because I haven't seen you since yesterday. But so in like the third row behind the UT bench, you want to hear the line of people that were sitting
yeah,
there?
Yeah, that'd be
Tom
great.
Taylor. And this is in order from end to end. Tom Taylor, Sheila Taylor, Peggy Pastelnik, and then Coach Say's mom.
Did Coach Jay's mom get a word in edgewise?
She probably moved.
Oh, that is hilarious. But, you know, Wharton gets a lot of the attention. It deservedly so. And then, of course, the Rock Garden, Rocky Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, the Panther Den is a great place to see a game, too. And this is the new year with the renovations, with the new
beautiful
bleachers
in there. Oh, my gosh.
And I love the floor. And, again, it'll be interesting to see the evolution from this year into next year. And I know the meat of their what now they played Quincy already, but I think the real teeth of the Western Big Six schedule is coming for them.
They play Rock Island next Friday. They haven't played Rocky or Moline yet. Their conference games so far have been Quincy, who of course, you know, potentially might be the best team in the whole state, but then they've played Alleman, Geneseo, and Galesburg, who, you know, have all really struggled this year. So,
well,
and on the Rock Ridge end of things, and I said this to Coach Harris on the post game, it's just so great to see. It's always fun to see them get to play in these venues like you're talking about against the competition they are, where now they're 11-5, but I mean, three of their losses are to Moline, Rock Island, and UT, right? And they've lost to Sherrard, who I think probably should be a top 10 team, and then Diet out of Chicago, who's a top 10 team in 2A. So their schedule, we talk about it every week, is just, you know, really challenging. And they got another one of those tests yesterday against a 4A team that is a solid 4A team at that in UT.
Well, and I will say this, because early in the season, they lose the matchup to Sherrard, and everybody's like, oh, man, what's going to happen? Well, Sherrard, we've found out through the progression of the season, is an elite 2A team. Mm-hmm. And you see Rock Ridge, and I still say the impact of the extended football season for Rock Ridge and some of those key kids still played a factor early in the season. I just truly believe it did. But you see now they're an elite, clearly a top 10 team with what they've done here in the past couple weeks. And the other thing I always like, and this dates back to when Toby Whiteman was the head coach, when Andy Say was the head coach, and when Jordan Harris is the head coach. And this is the similarities for all three of those guys. So I listened to him on the post game last night, and I'm like, that dude, he's mad because they lost to UT. Yep. And I'm like, UT is a really good team.
And he was mad when they lost to Moline.
Yeah,
too.
And that's the expectations of that program, because you immediately asked them, hey, there's takeaways from this game when you play, even though you lose. There are takeaways with the competition you're playing. But I'm like, man, no, he's mad that they lost the game, which that just tells you the place that program is in. And again, with them, you know, the development of, I don't know if you say it's development or whatever, it the Richard kid, you know, what he's been able to provide this year has been really impressive. And then even hearing, you know, some of the highlights listening to that game with the younger Wheatley kid coming off the bench last night and making plays against an opponent like that, I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and like you said about the expectations of their program, it is impressive just to, you know, hear, like you said, Coach Say, Coach Whiteman, Coach Harris too, that they, you know, go into these games and it's not just, oh, we're excited to be on the floor with this team and what a great opportunity to play at Wharton or the Panther Den or at the Rock Garden. No, they want and think that they should beat these teams and can compete with them. So it just says a lot kind of about the mentality there. I know the kids, it's the same way where they go into those games not thinking like, hey, it's cool. We get to play like Brock Harding, you know, a couple years ago. It's like, no, we want to beat him and we think we should compete with them. So, yeah, it's impressive, and it's been a lot of fun over the past whatever amount of years watching a school of Rockridge's size go and play in these places. And, I mean, the one year, a couple years ago, I think when Jace Lightman was senior, they beat Rock Island at Rock Island, which was just crazy. So, and then Coach Harris said something on our pregame, too. I don't know. He said he didn't go back and look, but how many times do you think Rockridge and UT have played in boys basketball in history? Probably hasn't been very many, would you think?
Oh, I know there were a couple times early in the Coach Whiteman era, and maybe with Coach Say, that UT played in that Geneseo holiday tournament. So they've played a couple times before. What was the reason? I was curious last night. What was the reason for that weird start time?
I never asked anybody. I don't know.
Yeah. What was the crowd like there?
It was decent. It was decent.
Yeah. All right, so we have another key matchup today in the Carl Sandburg Poetry Shootout, and they're playing the game at Carl Sandburg. But did I hear right, they're not utilizing a shot clock for that today?
Correct, they're
not. Now, what's the reason for that?
I don't know. They just aren't.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's why I thought they would, you know, since they're playing there, they would definitely play with a shot clock, because it'll be interesting to see how that factors then in the game, because we saw West Hancock, when they had the elite matchup with Peoria Manual, they played with the shot clock, and then with Rock Ridge, it was a shot clock. Now tonight, or this afternoon, what time is it? An afternoon start, right?
4 o'clock.
They'll play without a shot clock on an extended floor against Sherrard.
Yeah, it's interesting, because the only two times, or I guess I've seen West Hancock play like five times now, counting the games at Macomb, that tournament. And every game I've seen, they've played, it's been shot clock. The game at Abingdon was, and then the Western tournament had the shot clock as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that changes kind of how they play, because like you said, when they got behind in that game with Manuel, with the shot clock, they were able to still sit in that zone because Manuel couldn't just kind of take the air out of the ball and pass the ball around against the 2-3. They had to attempt shots, you know, every 35 seconds. So I'm not sure it'll change a whole lot for them. I mean, defensively, like, guarding Sherrard is a lot different than guarding Manuel. And I think Sherrard is a great team, but they just don't have the level of, like, athletes that Manuel has, of course. I mean, oh my gosh, some of those kids, the way they are able to get to the rim for them. By the way, did you see they beat Peoria High last night? Manuel did.
Oh, wow. What was the spread of that game?
It was close. I think they won by like five, maybe. But yeah, that's an impressive win for them. And they beat Richwoods earlier in the year, too. So those are just the three public schools in Peoria, right? So they beat the other two, and Manuel's the smallest one of those three. So that's an impressive win. But yeah, I think like today will be a great game with Sherrard and West Hancock. They're two really high-quality teams in 2A, and I know for West Hancock, they've been missing their second leading scorer, Gavin Grothaus. He's missed, I think, two or so weeks. Now, talking with the West Hancock people at the Macomb Western Holiday Tournament last week, Coach Dahl thought he would be back today. They were kind of targeting this game against Sherrard is when they thought he'd be able
to be back.
It was a high ankle sprain. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And he's their second leading scorer, and he's also their leading rebounder, which is impressive with the Knowles kid. I think Grothaus averages like 12 and 8. So,
well, it's interesting for them, and you know, not having him playing is there's no question that's a difference in maybe some of the outcomes. But I know they got off to the great start. They played in the Jacksonville tournament, or yes, they played some, and they won. Did they win that?
They won on a tiebreaker. They went 2-1. I think like two or three teams went 2-1 because they lost to Jacksonville, but then they won their other two games. But they did. They were the champions. Yeah.
So, but I will say this about them today: why is so paramount for them? Because they've had these key matchups, but they haven't won any of them.
Right.
And they need to win one of these key matchups, and that's the potential super sectional opponent, right? For if a Rock Ridge or Sherrard advances to the super sectional site this year, which is Bank of Springfield Center in downtown Springfield, that would be the potential opponent. So,
and Williamsville is also in that, would feed into that super sectional, who is a state finalist last year and is undefeated so far this year. By the way, West Hancock and Williamsville play next Friday, so that'll be an interesting result too.
Well, that's a key indicator. There's no question about that. Now, we'll talk a lot of high school, much more high school basketball, with a definite expert in high school basketball around the state. And Ty mentioned Quincy and Aaron Britton, who's Nesto Hoops on X at Nesto Hoops, the basketball expert in the state of Illinois. He said, I remember we recorded our interview with him yesterday, that Quincy, he thinks, is the best basketball team in the state of Illinois in 2024, 2025. And I was thinking, you know, coming in today, how the, how media has changed so much over the years, because I know when I grew up, it was like, who was the basketball expert that you always defaulted to? And it was like Taylor Bell from the Chicago Sun-Times or Chicago Tribune. And I guess Michael O'Brien may be in that category, but mostly just a city and suburban Chicago guy.
He does a great job,
there's no question about that.
Gosh.
But it's just how we consume media now. It's this guy who's got a 9-to-5 job and basically just devotes his blood, sweat, and tears to covering high school basketball at an elite level.
Yeah, it's a crazy
and
level.
He's the guy, and he should be. I mean, he's the guy that knows everything about high school basketball. And the proof is the receipts he has with the Excel spreadsheets with every conference and every team.
Every
and the
result.
State of Illinois is unbelievable.
I truly don't think. I mean, there's no way that any other like state has that, like a resource like that. It's incredible what he does, and the schools in Illinois are very lucky for a guy like him to put in all that time and, like you said, sweat and tears. Because there's no way any other state has anything to the comprehensive level that, like, Nesto's spreadsheet. It's crazy. If you never looked at it, you need to go. It's just nestohoops.com, I think, is the URL. And then it takes you to, like, this bare bones page. It's like a web page out of like the 1990s, I feel like. And I was born in 98, so I guess I don't really know if that's what it is.
But then you get to it and it's like, holy smokes.
Yeah, you click on, there's like three buttons. One of them is spreadsheet. You click on the spreadsheet and it looks like it's going to give your computer like a virus, you know. But then you go to it and it's like the great, it's an incredible, like, just heap of information. There's, you know, he does the state rankings every week. He has like all these different metrics where he has like a strength of schedule for each classification. You know, it's really crazy. And I can't work Excel very well. So it's amazing just that level of it, of his like understanding of the program. But then, you know, all the different things that you can look at in there, and it's like all the different tournaments have their schedules and the shootouts. It is absolutely crazy. So he deserves a ton of credit, and he does phenomenal work. Phenomenal.
So the comparison, here's how I compare that with, you know, making sure people understand how impressive this guy is. Mm-hmm. So you have an entire IHSA staff that does the football. That's just 9 games a week, right? And you know, and that's a massive amount of work.
Oh, yeah.
And then you think of all these basketball teams that play 35 games a year. Mm-hmm. And there are more basketball teams than football teams in the state of Illinois. And he manually has the scores of every one of those games, and he's on his own, and it's not a job. It's basically a labor law. He ain't getting paid for this either.
And the thing too that's crazy, he has them like the next morning. Like it's like every day he has them the next day. It's crazy. I mean, I can't give him enough credit or props or recognition. He deserves so much. He deserves his flowers, man. People should thank him all the time because it's awesome. And He's been really fun to get to know. I know over the past couple of years, we've run into him a few times and got to know him. He's a really cool guy, too. Like, I love getting the chance to talk to him. Like, when he came to Orion this year, it was pretty funny. He came up, he was talking about some restaurant he was eating at Orion. And then I think we saw him at Rock Island this year. And he was at the sectional we were at last year, too. And then we normally see him down at the state finals. So it just is interesting. And I like, he just has a great feel for the game because he sees so many different teams play. And it just, he sees, I'm sure, some really great teams. I'm sure he sees some really bad teams throughout the year, too. So it's just it's fun to kind of follow. I like following just like where he goes because it's all over the place. I mean, all over the place. And it's these long, long, long drives he's making like midweek to watch, like, you know, for example, Sherrard and Orion.
Well, and I like his story because he grew up in deep south, southern Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then he lives now in the northwestern portion of the state. And you know you've made it, right? One way, when you know you've made it, when people get mad at you about something because they want your undivided attention or your respect. So people, you know, that's when you know you made it. But because his opinion matters,
yeah,
right?
I agree.
Because
he
sees, and that's the thing. He travels the byways of the state to see these teams up close and in personal. And I think that's the other great story. And again, that's not his job.
No.
But he still does it. And the other cool story about him, and we didn't learn it, and I know, I think we've said it on the air before, but when we were at the state tournament last year. He was traveling with somebody, and I thought, hey, is that your dad you're with? And he's like, and he kind of laughed. He goes, no, that's not my dad. And I go, well, who is it? And he goes, well, he said his name, and he goes, he was the former official scorer for the St. Louis Cardinals, yeah. And he now lives in Oregon, Illinois. And I'm like, are you serious? And he goes, yeah, he's the official scorer. He was the official scorer for like a long time for the St. Louis Cardinals. So I did the internet search on him. Lo and behold, it comes up. And there, it was just hilarious kind of. And then talking to the former Cardinal official scorer, he's kind of a character himself.
Yeah, and I know, like, he was at the game at Orion this year. And he was at Rock Island with Nesto, and Rock Ridge was there too. So he's... And he said off the air with us that he's, you know, this year really traveled a lot with him to all these games. So it's like, that just is, it's really interesting. Like, like you said, it just, his story is just a great story in every aspect of it. He just is he's a great resource for high school basketball in the state. So if you haven't heard of Aaron Britton, Nesta Hoops, I'm sure most people have, but definitely should follow him. He does incredible work, and I know a lot of people are always excited every Monday when he puts out his rankings, and then, like you said, everybody gets mad at him. Why aren't we here? Why aren't we here?
So it's interesting, though, and I heard a little bit about it, but as the season progresses, and he'll talk about it in the interview, but, you know, I think the other big story that's evolving downstate is, as we proceed here in the season, because I'm going to throw out this school's name, and then everybody's going to go bonkers again, so I'm going to say the school's name. And then I'm going to pause 2 seconds, let everybody go bonkers, and then we'll continue this conversation. Belleville Altoff, 1001, yeah. 1002. All right, they're a really good basketball team this year. And I think, did they play Quincy or no?
2-11 point game.
Yeah, so they're coming off the state championship football win. And
the Warpath, yeah.
So their point guard is the running back that's going to Oregon. Now, Nesta wasn't sure about how many other kids played for the football team that played for the basketball team. But it's interesting, they're in a subsectional that is absolutely loaded with traditional small school powers in the state of Illinois that are having remarkable years. So you haven't heard the pushback yet in basketball that you have in football with Altoff, but it's coming, because if they roll through that sectional down there with some of those traditional downstate public school powers, you're going to hear the same argument that you hear with the football debate. So I'm curious to see kind of that story evolve. And I guess I didn't realize how good they were going to be in basketball this year too, but holy smokes, if they're playing Quincy to an 11-point game. I saw Quincy play in person. I'm like, holy smokes, that's a pretty good 2A team then.
Yeah, they are a threat to win the state championship in boys basketball for sure. And you talked about their subsectional. See, these are some of the teams in their subsection. You want to hear them?
Yeah.
Breeze Central, Carlisle, Columbia, Nashville, Pinckneyville. And then Benton, who was the state runner-up last year and has a Division I kid back, they're on the other side of that subsectional. So, like, that sectional, like Carterville 2A section, is going to have three at least top 10 teams in it. And each of those regionals in the first subsection went through will probably have two top 10 teams in them. And one of them will have probably three. I mean, that's going to be really interesting to follow when we get to the postseason. And like you said, if Altoff just rolls through that, that's going to really make a lot of people mad, especially down that way.
With those basketball powers. And then you're talking about Benton, and Benton is on the other side of that subsectional, but they played Pinckneyville in a holiday tournament at Pinckneyville that Benton was a state runner-up, you said, right, last year? And they have one of the top 2A players back.
Docker Tedeschi.
So when they played Pinckneyville in the holiday tournament, Pinckneyville was leading, and Pinckneyville's very good this year.
And it was on their home floor, and there was an absolutely crazy, massive, huge crowd at that game. It was wild, the pictures.
So time was expiring. This is the championship game, and the Tedeschi kid got the rebound. Three-quarters court, heaves it, and the official calls a foul as he's throwing the ball toward the hoop. And it's a three-shot foul, three-pointer, because it's a beyond the arc, and he goes to the line and sinks all three, and they win it, that tournament. But that's I'm saying.
But then
that's
there was like a crazy the post game was like people going after each other and screaming and yelling. It was crazy. It was like the Ohio State Michigan thing.
Yeah. So that's the type of storyline that's evolving and developing with Belleville Altoff in basketball this year. It's not getting the attention that it got in football, but it takes a person like Nesto Hoops to bring attention to those type of stories.
And to be honest with you, in football, it didn't gain a ton of attention. I mean, people talked about it, but because in the regular season, at least, like, we knew they were super, super good. But last year, I think them losing, getting upset by Camp Point Central kind of quieted that talk this year initially. But then when you see in the postseason, especially the final two rounds of the playoffs were in the semifinals, they just destroyed Camp Point Central, who was the state champion last year. And then in the state title game, I mean, what they did to Lena Winslow, who kills everybody all the time, people are like, whoa, like, this team being in 1A is pretty crazy. So, and I know in basketball, they're 2A, and I don't know. I mean, I guess if they were to go to state a couple times, they'd probably get moved up to 3A. I think that's how it works. But I mean, the issue is, and again, it's the whole public-private thing, but their enrollment isn't very high. It just isn't. So, I mean, they're kind of...
Well, Catholic school enrollment
right.
is declining
and you're
everywhere.
Just kind of stuck with them because that's how the system is right now. They're going to be a 2A team in basketball. They just are. And
well, and that's the other thing, too, about, you know, the other argument's going to be here, okay, is in that part of the state is, and you saw a little bit of it last year, that... You know, some of these coaches are upset about all of these good programs are in that part of the state and they mm-hmm. have to play in the subsectional. My argument is, okay, that's the way it is. That's the geography mm-hmm. of the state, and that's how the state has always assigned sports like basketball and volleyball and softball and baseball. It's a geographical postseason setup. There's really no other way to see, I think unless you would see the entire sectional, but even that right. that sectional complex, if you talk about the teams
there's still seven or eight of the top 15-20 teams. I agree with you though that I mean with basketball and those sports where like everybody's in the postseason and there's only four classes. People are like, only, but meaning like compared to football, there's eight. I mean, with there being four, there are going to be teams that are more spread out where you can't do it like you do with football where you seed the whole thing. And but I agree that I think, I mean, when you look at that, it is a little, I don't want to say unfair, but I think it takes away from the postseason trail because you know, like, one of those teams who probably should be a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team is losing in the regional final. And we get into that with Nesto talking about, you know, maybe a different way to do the postseason, you know, bracketing or the seeding. And I think the only way you could change it to make it a little, I don't know if better is the right word, but more level is seeding, like you said, the entire sectional. And then you have the one versus whatever, 13, four, or I guess for and into the each sectional, there's probably what, 20, 25 teams or so. So I don't know. And then I think you'd have to just have the regional round be like the higher seed just gets to play at home. I think it'd be hard to find a host because you wouldn't know who is all in each regional, for example, until like 2 weeks before the postseason starts when they do the seeding.
And that's why there is never going to be a perfect way to seed
no, there
any
isn't.
Of these
and the best teams matches. End up winning anyway, right?
Yeah,
so,
but I thought the interesting story, though, and this is from Nesto again, is that one of the top transfers in that part of the state for basketball is from St. Louis. And you're like, well, yeah, he went to Belleville Altoff. No, he wound up at Columbia.
Yeah.
So those storylines are always different, but that won't get... Now, if that kid would have wound up at Belleville Altoff instead of Columbia. So that's a great part of the state in terms of basketball. But kind of segueing back to today with Sherrard and West Hancock. And I hope the top player from West Hancock comes back in play so you get that opportunity. But another key test here for Sherrard, because I thought, you know, the sample size they got last week over at the Mike Hutchins Holiday Classic. I thought East Dubuque was a really solid team. They missed a lot of perimeter shots last week in that championship game, and that I thought Byron is a solid really solid 2A team that can beat the elite teams in the state, and they will be an elite team next year in 2A boys basketball.
I'm excited to see how their second half of the season goes, because I know, like, in the Big Northern, they'll get to play Rock Falls, who's solid, and Rockford Christian, who's a really good top 10 team that's undefeated. So,
and they're playing Pecatonica.
Yeah, so I think that's a team that'll definitely win 20-plus games this year. What, they have three losses now, right? Yeah. So, yeah, they're really good, and that was a really good win for Sherrard.
And they lost their two first games of the year with the Considine.
Right. So, yeah, they're a team to follow, and then they're, like, in the same subsectional as Riverdale, because Riverdale got sent north, so.
Yeah. All right, so anything else about West Hancock Sherrard today? That's what time's the broadcast?
4 o'clock, 3:30 around there. It's the third game of four over at Carl Sandburg. So, this is something too. That's a really tiny, tiny, intimate gym with not very much seating.
Talk to Brian Hutton. He's an assistant coach.
Yeah, I hope he'll be there. Has he been in any Sherrard games?
He was at the championship game last week with East Dubuque.
Awesome. Hopefully he's there today and I get to talk to him. But anyway, talking about the maybe he'll do color commentary.
He should.
Yeah. But him and Jansen Bender can do it together. When you talk about, like, the game with Sherrard and West Hancock, about Carl Sandburg, like Sean Temple, he said to me when I was talking about that last week, because they're going to be there today because three of their schools are competing in that shootout too. He said that...
And WCAZ will be there.
He said that facility, he said it makes the shoebox look like Madison Square Garden because of how small it is. And I know there's a lot of interest, obviously, in the Sherrard-West Hancock game, where I think it'll be a great crowd because Sherrard has traveled super well this year. And this is a big game, you know, for them in their whole schedule. And then West Hancock, too, like when we saw them at Abingdon against Manuel, they had like a really big and rowdy crowd. And the same thing at Macomb in the semis and the championship game. There was a lot of like red and black there, and they're kind of like a boisterous crowd, you know. So I'm excited. It's going to be a really fun environment, I think. I think it's going to be like a lot of people for both teams will be there to cheer for them. So It'll be fun. I'm excited. I think it'll be a really high level, like, high school basketball game, which is what you want. I mean, you get into the second half of the season. I know, like, I listened to your post game with Coach Johnson last week after they beat East Dubuque, and you know, he said that basically we want to play games like this, we want to play teams like this, because we think we're on this level now. And I agree with them, and I think they're going to get a lot out of this game, win or lose. But it's going to be fun, and if they can win this game, Sherrard, today, I really think, because, like, the last AP poll for boys basketball is December 18th. It came out on Wednesday, so the last 2 weeks there haven't been polls because of the holidays. But I think that if they win today, Sherrard and Rockridge will both be top 10 teams next week.
All right,
this is probably the first time that's ever happened.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't happened since I've been here. So you have to sell it. You have to sell it to your fellow pollsters
if
they win today. I thought it was cool, though, like, such a small market radio thing. Yesterday, so as people know, we sell St. Louis Cardinal calendars.
For $12.
And we should do like a podcast of like every third person that comes in to pick up one. We like ask them one question: what's your favorite Cardinal memory, or why do you listen to St. Louis Cardinal baseball on the radio? And that brings in Dale Jones. Dale Jones, yes. Auctioneer Studio. He's big Jack Buck and calling the Cardinals because Dale Jones ran the board here at WMJ. But I thought it was cool because Aiden Taranas, his dad, came in and he bought one. He's a Cardinal fan, and he's like, "Hey, man, I'll see you down at Carl Sandburg."
Yeah, this is what he said. He's like, "I'm leaving at 2 to get there in time." He had a cool UIC Flames hoodie on, though. I love their colors. Then obviously Aiden is going there. He'll be a baseball player there starting next year at the Division I level. But yeah, it was they're like light blue and red. It's like the city of Chicago colors. That's a sweet hoodie.
Yeah, traffic will be backed up to the Gold Star FS warehouse. trying to go to that game off 150. But anyway, that'll be a good vibe today, and to be quite honest, you like to play in some of those weird settings to see how you handle it. So I think that'll be pretty impressive, and I'm looking forward to that game. That should be a lot of fun and a good test for Sherrard, because they're are they at one other shootout this year, or how many Are they done?
I think this is their last shootout they play at, I believe. They were supposed to play in Peoria Manuals, but the game, they had to, the Manual had to move the date back a week, and Sherrard had a game scheduled.
Now, you and Nesto are working on a 35th game. 31st game, excuse me.
We're trying, and we won't spoil that, but he'll talk about that coming up, because he's trying to start like a Nesto Cup each year, where it's like a late season non-conference pickup for two elite teams in the state. Last year, he did Byron and Beecher. Because when they put it together, they were the only two remaining undefeated teams in the state. Byron had then lost a game somewhere in there, but they played like in early February on a neutral site on a Saturday, and he's trying to find two teams to set another Nesto Cup up. He got like a little trophy that he made up for, and Beecher got to take it last year. So I told him, I'm like, I'm hoping we got two really elite teams, so I'm hoping maybe we can get one of our teams in the Nesto Cup. So we'll see. He'll talk about that coming up as part of our, you know, 30 or so minute conversation with the guru, right, Aaron Britton.
And then there's like a ceremonial jump ball. Here's Nesto hoop.
Yeah, right. He gets to throw it up, yeah. Or it's like the first free throw,
and
he
then
shoots
who would
a
be
free
the,
throw.
Who would be the like Nesto hoop three-man officiating crew?
Oh, I don't know. Dave Hasley. And
yeah, you got to be one of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, anything else before we get into...
I don't have anything else. I'm just excited for this game today between Sherrard and West Hancock. Should be a lot of fun. I've got my purple WRMJ hoodie on. We're ready to head to Galesburg.
All right. The only other thing I was curious to get your reaction to is, so we've been a long time home of fighting Illini sports on this radio station. So this week's been like one of the most banner weeks of fighting Illini sports. I'm curious from your take, do you think Illinois, in today's environment, they have the two perfect guys with Underwood and Bielema, who clearly know how to play the transfer portal game, because everybody complains about the portal, and what collegiate sports have become. But not for the portal, right? Illinois wouldn't be where they're
right.
at.
No, I agree.
I mean, is that – and they've made up such a difference – especially in football, in such a quick amount of time with the portal world. They've closed the gap with the elite SEC teams, you can see now. Is the future that bright for these programs?
I think that Underwood and Bielema were both, I mean, perfect hires. I mean, the what they have both done, because even like, and I know Illinois has more of a, you know, heritage in basketball at the university, but like when he took it over, it was a disaster. I mean, they had been bad for a long time, and I remember his first year they were terrible, and it was like, oh my gosh, because I remember me and a group of people went up when they played his first year, they played at Wisconsin when Ethan Happ was there, and they got beat by like 35. It was like one of the ugliest performances I've ever seen. I remember we were leaving and we were like, oh my god. And then, you know, I mean, with some of the talent he's got, like, you know, with like Io and those guys, I mean, he's got really high level players to come there. And then
the high level players he's got this year. Holy
smokes. And like Terrence Shannon, who was incredible. And then on the football side too, like it's the same thing where Illinois, I mean, they were like a doormat for a long time in the Big Ten in football. And for them to, I mean, I remember when, like, the Big Ten started playing a true championship game, I would always tell people, I'm like, Illinois will never play in that. Never. There's a 0% chance. That's not the case anymore. I mean, and talking about, like, a college football playoff now with 12 teams, if Illinois would have beat Minnesota, I think they would have had an argument. They would have got in, but they would have had a legitimate argument to say, hey, we should be number 12 and get in here. And they prove it. I mean, they beat South Carolina. I mean, I never would have thought I would have ever seen Illinois beat an SEC team. I mean, really. And to beat them the way they did, where it was like kind of really flashy, and they were like really getting under the skin of South Carolina. I really like the way Bielema, he like is really like brash almost, and I just love his attitude. I think they're going to be good. And next year, I know they have quite a bit of talent returning. So,
and a beneficial schedule.
Yep. Yeah.
The key test is playing Ohio State, but they have kind of like Indiana's schedule that Indiana had this past season, so maybe they can play in Indianapolis for a Big Ten title. Yeah, that would
or
be
get
absolute
to the
bananas.
Get to the playoffs. Yeah. That's really cool. So it's been a fun week, and it was funny you mentioned that. So yesterday over at UT, when I got there, Tom Hassan, you broadcast from in a separate balcony, little section. Yeah. So he came right up to the balcony. He's like, did you watch that Illinois game last night? He's like, oh my God. So we talked about that for 5 or 10 minutes about how well they played on the road against Oregon and in men's basketball. And then just one more thing. It was really cool last night at that game at UT. There were a lot of people who you've seen a lot around Rock Ridge, a lot of the kids who played for Coach Day. I think Braden Dean was there and Nate Henry was there, and Carson Clemmie, I think he goes to school down in Florida, and he was home for break. He was there, and Keith Bogner and Glenn Cook. I think I saw Peyton Brown there too.
Oh wow!
It was just a big reunion of everybody wanted to see that game.
Oh, but getting back to the Illinois bowl game, the greatest thing I saw in the Illinois bowl game is so many people taking picture of Coach Graves and his family. He had the old school Illini night football helmet on. I'm like, I didn't know he was a big Illinois fan. And no, I'm like, more respect to you, Coach Graves.
I remember he was saying, I think it was after the day when they played Mercer County in football, the next day he went, I believe, to that game when they played Purdue, the crazy 50-48 game. But I texted him because I was watching, and I sent him a picture right away. It was not the one of the whole family, but just at one point it was the shot on ESPN was isolated on just him, and he was clapping. So I texted him, and I didn't say anything. I just sent the picture, and he responded 10 minutes later, and he just said, good game, need to be up 14-3, worried about them hanging up.
Oh, that was awesome, man. And then, you saw Daphne and his two daughters, too. That was so awesome, man.
Yeah, they almost had a good time down in, Orlando? So.
Yeah, so next year we'll all have to go to Indianapolis for the Big Ten game with them. And wear the old school Illini football helmet. That's what I noticed most about it. I love that shirt he was wearing. But anyway, all right, so we have Nesto. Everybody's like, what's Nesto Hoops? Aaron Britton at Nesto Hoops.
Did we ask him last year where Nesto comes from?
Yeah, he told the story, and I forget what it is.
Yeah.
And the backstory, too, and we'll have him on again this year, maybe when we're down at the state tournament or whatever, when we cross paths, and just kind of how he did this. But, I mean, really a great story with just his love for high school basketball and what it's created. So we have a fun conversation coming up. Mr. Aaron Britton, Nesto Hoops, and you're listening to the WMJ Sports Line from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29 by the buy here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
Building relationships, supporting the community, and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Jim Taylor, Ty Taylor on the WRMJ Sports Line. Pleased to have the expertise of our basketball guru in the state of Illinois. That is Nesto Hoops, Mr. Aaron Britton. Happy New Year, Nesto Hoops. How are things going?
Happy New Year, Jim and Ty. Things are well in the world of Nesto Hoops.
All right, so what holiday tournaments were you at over the last couple of weeks? And what has impressed you most so far when we talk about small school basketball in 1A, 2A?
I went to the Eastland Holiday Tournament that finished up before Christmas, and I did not see Pecatonica in that tournament, but they did win that, blowing out the host by 30 points. I think that was eye-opening for everyone around the state that follows it, because they were 1 and 2 in the state in my 1A ranking at that time. It was a 30-point ball game, and it was over. The game was over in like 4 minutes, so it was like, wow. And then after Christmas, I was down south visiting some family. I got to go to Centralia, and I'd been there a few times in the past, but it had been a few years, and I saw Mount Vernon play Glenwood. It was a nice little 3A matchup that went into overtime, won by Mount Vernon. I went up to Vandalia for the first time ever, and that's a small school tournament, and then got down to the new Cobden Gym. And then when I got back up into the 815 area, I went down to Pontiac for those semifinals, and those were very good games. And I went to the Big Dipper championship game on Sunday evening, and that, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard about the traditional atmosphere that goes on at the Dipper title game, but it's a packed house. There's a lot of emotional people in there that are rooting for their team, and it can get borderline out of hand at times, but it went off without a hitch. And then New Year's Eve, the Jack Tosh Holiday Tournament, the 32-team bracket tournament that I'm fortunate enough to be involved in for the bracketizing of that tournament. And that was won by Bolingbrook in a really good game over Fenwick.
It's been a busy time of the year for Nesto Hoops, it sounds like. But yeah, talking about like the holiday tournament time, I feel like once you get past that and once you get into the year, it feels like you're kind of into the second half of the season. It's just any big like small school takeaways in 1A/2A from the holiday tournament week as we kind of flip the page now to the second half of the season here?
Rock Ridge winning that Macomb tournament was a nice shot in the arm, I think, for their fans and for that program. Keep in mind that the West Hancock team was missing one of their best players, Gavin Groudis, but he should be back in another week or two with a high ankle sprain. But that was a much needed performance for them, because they had, in the last few years, Rock Ridge has scheduled those games against the Western Big Six teams, in which they know they're probably not going to win, but it's just, we want to be prepared. The win loss wasn't as pretty as a lot of teams are at this point. So them starting to get rolling was really nice to see. Sherrard holding serve at their own tournament was reassuring for their status in 2A. The teams that really disappointed me was Orion and Riverdale, because I thought, you know, they would, one of those teams should have won that Erie tournament, and neither of them did. Yeah, what are you guys thought on that?
Yeah, I thought Orion was probably the favorite going into that tournament. I was kind of surprised they lost in basically the semifinal round two. And I was kind of surprised as well that Riverdale got beat by Forreston. Because going in, like you said, I kind of thought that would maybe be the championship game between Orion and Riverdale. But you mentioned Rock Ridge and Sherrard there. I know that you've been able to see both of those teams play. And, of course, in the WRMJ coverage area, this is kind of where our conversation is going. What was kind of your, I guess, takeaway from getting to see them? I know Rock Ridge, you saw them, I think, in the very first week of the season, Sherrard a couple of weeks later against Orion. So just getting to see those two teams in person, were you impressed by them, you think?
When I saw Rock Ridge, they played Diet out of Chicago. And, you know, Diet was pretty well disciplined in that game. You know, they grabbed control of that game with some threes early on, and then just kind of the lead yo-yoed from 11, and Rock Ridge would get it down to 6. But Diet was in control of that game basically the entire game. But we didn't know how good Diet was at that time, and they've turned out to be a really good 2A team. They lost to Rock Island by 7 or 8 points, and they went down to the Centralia tournament and finished 4th. So I think, you know, with Rock Ridge playing them that well with – at that point, without a legitimate third scoring option, in my opinion, you know, they have Bull and Kunico, and after that, you know, you have to, where are you going to get your points from? And I think that's where they maybe started to learn some things about themselves down at Macomb.
Well, and I was going to bring up the fact you mentioned Orion in Riverdale, and I know Ty and I have talked about this, you know, several times. They're still, in this area, in my opinion, they're still the wild card. One of those teams,
I think is going to have a factor in who wins the conference. And then I know Riverdale's not in the subsectional complex with Sherrard and Rock Ridge, but Orion is. And I think Orion has the capability to end an elite team's program if they're making shots from the perimeter. They're one of those kind of serious wild card teams. So it's going to be interesting to see the evolution here in January and February. And I know one of the big matchups this weekend we have in our listing area, because you know, talking about West Hancock, you know, they down at the Macomb Western Holiday Tournament. Now they'll turn around and I believe they're back-to-back games with Rock Ridge in the championship of the Macomb Western Holiday Tournament. And then they play on the college floor in a much different environment in a very small gym, playing at that Carl Sandburg shootout on Saturday. And then I think West Hancock also has Williamsville on their schedule later in the season. So they've really amped up their schedule. But I know, too, and they've played Peoria Emanuel. Eventually, though, you want to win one of those key games, right? I mean, that's a big thing for them. They haven't really been able to do that yet.
Yeah, and the manual game, they were without Gratis also, so they won in a tiebreaker scenario. They won that Jacksonville Thanksgiving tournament, and they were the only small school in that. And they were full strength at that point. But yeah, you're right. You know, they're able to play really good teams close, but they haven't beaten a really good 2A team yet. And we'll see if they can make that happen against Sherrard. But there's You guys get to watch Ryland Carton a lot more than I do, but he's just a joy to watch play the game, because he's just a microwave scorer. And he can score from three, he can dunk on you, he can pull up mid-range. He's, in my opinion, he's one of the 5-10 best players in 2A.
So I was going to ask you, and mind you, I know the sample size is maybe small, and you can watch games, you know, via NFHS or whatever. But, you know, seeing teams in person, so we're talking 2A as it relates to Sherrard and Rock Ridge. How do you think they match up to the elite 2A competition in terms of the different programs you've seen already this season?
Well, when they play each other, Sherrard's already beaten Rock Ridge. So, you know, you would have to say that both of them are of equal stature throughout the state. I feel like Rock Ridge traditionally, and at the end of the day, probably has the ability to be a little more physical in the post than Sherrard does. And I think that could be a factor against Manuel or West Hancock or Williamsville. I think Sherrard has the best scoring option, or the best scoring player of those two teams. But when you talk about lining them up against Benton down south, or Breeze Central, or Pinckneyville, they match up player for player pretty well. You know, none of those teams are going to score a lot of points in a high marquee game like that. The Benton Pinckneyville title game was barely got to 50. So, you know, it's not like those teams are going to run you out of the gym with offense. It's can they be tough enough in the half court to get some stops defensively?
Well, I was going to ask you, too, kind of going along that ilk, I guess. So Sherrard's hosting a sectional this year, and we know on the other side, the subsectional it feeds in includes, you know, Manuel, and Normal U-High is in there as well, and El Paso Gridley, I think, is off to a solid start this season, too. So when you look at just the overall sectional at Sherrard and 2A, I mean, I think coming into the season and heading into the postseason, it feels like Manuel probably is a favorite, maybe even a decently heavy favorite. So would you say that runs through them, you think, as we stand right now here, basically in the first week of January?
Well, it ran through them last year and they didn't get it done.
Right.
So I think, you know, we have to keep that in mind. And they're, you know, they're not, you know, there's some kryptonite, and that kryptonite is strong half court defense. If you can hang on to the ball against them and make them score, you know, stay in front of you, they're going to have a problem beating a really good 2A team. Now, if they can take the ball away from you, get some live ball turnover situations, and get layups, they're going to run you out of the gym. But I think so. That's what McComb was able to do last year in that sectional. They're just able to stay engaged defensively long enough to where they were able to get some magic happen. And it's going to take some of that to beat a good team like Manuel, but that's what happened. And Rock Ridge, Sherrard, Manuel, and then the other participant on that subsectional B side. I think that's kind of wide open at this point. You're looking at, it could be Bloomington Central Catholic, it could be Normal U High, Tremont and Tri-Valley. They're off to really nice starts alongside El Paso Gridley. So they're going to have a lot of good teams that are going to knock each other out before Sherrard, Horry, and Rock Ridge even have to worry about it.
And I think the other thing that's interesting as it relates to Manuel, the disadvantage for them is they're going to have to travel to, Rock Island County this year if they get that far, and they're going to have to, and then if Sherrard is able to travel and make it, along the tournament trail, they'll play on their home court for that sectional and then basically be kind of a home game for Rock Ridge if they get there because they're playing in lower Rock Island County. Now, I think that weighs in the favor in the postseason for Sherrard and Rock Ridge to play, in close proximity to where they're at, because I tell you, our local schools the last couple of years, and a credit to Rock Ridge, some of the sites they've had to travel to for, the sectional's been absolutely crazy, and finally they're going to be able to make a short trip this year. I think that potentially could mean something too in terms of who advances.
Absolutely. You get that home crowd behind you. You get a strong student section, that can mess with some of those Manual players, or in general, it just becomes a really difficult atmosphere for the visiting team. And even if it's not Sherrard playing in that final, it's going to feel like a road game for one of those teams if it's versus Sherrard or Rock Ridge.
So statewide, I know kind of the big story over the past couple of weeks is, and I know in your rankings, a new number one in Altoff Catholic, and they made, of course, a lot of headlines in the football season winning the 1A state championship. So into the number one spot in your rankings this week in 2A boys basketball. Tell us about this Altoff team that it looks like is off to a really strong start and looks like a contender to potentially try to win a state title in the winter like they did in the fall. So tell us a little bit about, what they've been able to do so far this year.
Well, the running back, D.R.A. Hill, he's the point guard, and he as good as he is on the football field, he's just as good on the hardwood. Just like the football field, he's hard to stay in front of, and if you can't stay in front of him and you bring a weak side defender over and shut him down, he's kicking it off to the corner, and they have three or four, some games five kids who are going to hit threes, and that's what a lot of these schools are running into. They've got some really nice scalps under their belt. They beat Breeze Central by 20. They've beaten Centralia. They've beaten Modern Day. They only have one loss at full strength, and that was to Quincy, who, currently I think is the best team in the entire state, and that was an 11-point game. So their resume absolutely stands up in 2A compared to any other team at this point. The sectional that they're in, and even the subsectional, is really, really difficult. There's 8 teams already that have at least 10 wins. So you're looking at Altoff, Breeze Central, Carlisle, Columbia, Modern Day, Nashville, Pinckneyville, Westland. I mean, that sounds like a sectional in and of itself, yeah. And it's just a subsectional.
So with that, I mean, I was going to ask you about that too. That's part of that Carterville sectional down in the southern portion of the state in 2A. In the one subsectional you mentioned there, Altoff, Breeze Central, Carlisle, Columbia, Nashville, Pinckneyville, all in the same subsectional. I know a lot of the times, like in football, there's discussions about, how do we seed the playoffs? Is this really the right way? So when you look at like the basketball postseason trail, the subsectional setup into the sectional, do you like how the postseason seeding works and how the layout is, or do you have any maybe, changes you'd like to potentially see or explore when you talk about like the boys basketball postseason setup in Illinois?
I would like for them to get rid of the subsectional across all classes. I think you should be able to seed out the entire sectional. And if a team doesn't want to travel, the extra half hour or whatever it would be, I guess they can forfeit, but it's just, I don't see it being that big of a deal as far as the travel is concerned. And generally speaking, I'm just looking forward the best matchups that we can have. And if you have one subsectional that's, glaringly better than the other, then you run into the situation where you have a really ugly sectional final. But, that's not really primarily the IHSA's concern. But that would, you know, if I was the hoop czar, I would have eliminated the subsectionals, and I would you have to find a way, in my opinion, to get the seating away from the coaches, because half of them care and the other half don't care. And they're looking at records. And then the ones that don't care end up, you know, really making the difference in who gets what seed. And if some of these stacked subsectionals, it matters.
All right. I wanted to ask you to back up about Belleville Altoff. So you mentioned the top running backers, their point guard. How many of their football players do you know off top of your head are key contributors to the basketball program?
Well, I'm going to show my football idiocy here, because I don't have a good question or an answer for that beyond D.R.A. Hill. I'd have to go look at their roster.
Okay. But, well, I just wondered because, you know, the late start for them, right, with football, but they still have that impressive of a record where at full strength they have one loss, and it's a fairly competitive game to Quincy. Now, clearly they're not getting the pushback that they were getting in the football season with the 1A playoffs, but I'm assuming as the season goes along, and if they come out of that stacked subsectional that they're in with some of those schools in that part of the state that have the basketball pedigree, and they walk home after that subsectional with a loss to Belleville Altoff, I just wonder if you're going to get the type of reaction you got when the high school football season, you know, ended this past season, because they have an impressive resume already early in the season, and it looks like maybe they're poised to potentially be, you know, a football state champ and a basketball state champ.
Yeah, I think that's going to be coming, whether or not it's specifically from the team that they beat, but in general, it's going to come from, you know, droves of people that don't even know where those towns are. They just see the little parentheses around Altoff and know that they're not a public school. So we just have to, you know, they must be doing something wrong. But of recent history down there, it's been the big kicker has been the host of the sectional, because Breeze Central, I believe, has now lost 3 sectional finals in a row on the host team floor. And it was, the downside for them is their gym isn't quite big enough to host the 2A sectional. So they lost at Pinckneyville, they lost at Benton, and the Carterville gym is a really nice new gym. It's one of the best gyms in the state that's been built in the last 20 years. Fortunately, you know, Carterville can win a regional. I don't think Carterville can win a sectional. So I don't think they'll have to worry about that road environment, per se, this year.
All right, we're seeing more and more, I'm happy to see it now, more and more 1A, 2A venues that have implemented, you know, the shot clock. And, you know, last year I was concerned because most of the venues I went at, small school places, no shot clock, you know, can't experiment with it. We're seeing more and more 1A, 2A schools this year kind of get it. And of course, you know, next year is going to be the final year without a shot clock. And it's interesting to see what dynamic that really is going to have when it becomes a rule, right? And the one thing that I thought was, you know, interesting strategy wise is I went to the West Hancock Peoria Emanuel game. And West Hancock was kind of hanging in there, and they were able to, and I thought what was interesting, like early in the fourth quarter or late in the third quarter, you know, maybe an 8-point, 6-point game, something like that, where I saw one moment where, like, Peoria Emanuel, because West Hancock stayed in the zone, said, let's just hold the ball, and then, woo, they realize, we can't do that because the shot clock is in effect. Mm-hmm. So to me, that kind of had an impact on that game, where if West Hancock has to come out of that zone, even though they're trailing by 6 or 8 with 8 minutes to go, I think that the difference in that game, the margin is going to be a lot different. So you can size it up either way, where you can hold the ball or you can't hold the ball. And we talk about strategy and the impact there, but I just think it's really going to be interesting, especially when we see these high-level games, if the shot clock really is going to have an impact on outcome, I guess, long story short.
Yeah, I don't personally think it's going to impact winners and losers. I think the teams that are going, they were winning before, are probably going to be winning afterward. What I do like is the late game scenario where, you know, if it's a 3-point game and you're defending under a minute, you no longer have to be in that must foul situation. You can guard hard for 30 seconds and hopefully force a miss and get a rebound. You know, whereas without the shot clock, you have to foul immediately. Then it just turns into this free throw shooting contest. So that part of it, I think, will, from a viewer standpoint, will be a lot better.
All right,
but I don't know that it definitely doesn't make the ball go in more, you know, so I don't know that you all of a sudden get 60, 70, 80-point games.
Again, we're happy to have Aaron Britton, Nesta Hoops, on Sportsline with us this morning. Starting to run out of time, but as you look forward to the second half of the season, as we start to kind of work our way towards the postseason, any big kind of storylines you're following, small school level, or some events, games you're really kind of interested to see the results of?
I'm always excited for the Martin Luther King weekend, because there's games on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So I try to get to as many games that weekend as I can. And then the Riverton shootout is something that I'm always looking forward to. And I believe Rock Ridge goes down there again this year. Then the other underlying issue for me is I got to find a matchup for the second annual Nesto Cup. I don't have that figured out yet. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was Byron and Beecher last year, right?
Right.
Yeah, we got to try to figure that out, too. We got to try and get, like, Sherrard or Rock Ridge in that.
That's right. I was thinking about Sherrard the other night. You know, we got to get them a good non-conference pickup here.
Yeah, I think they have an open date. I think they have one. Is that right, off the top of your head? I think they do.
Yes.
All right. I'll be in touch. So one of Sherrard's assistants, Rich Greenman, he's like the big running joke is he's always the one who's setting stuff up. Like he set up the game, or supposedly he set up the game. They got into the Metamora shootout with Manuel last year, and he was, I think, was instrumental in getting this game with West Hancock too. So yeah, I'm sure I'll say something to him, and we'll see if he can cook something up again.
You know, they have one loss, and then Williamsville has an open date also, I believe.
All right.
So maybe we find a day in February to make that happen.
Yes, sir. I will. I'm sure they're listening, and I'm sure they'll would love to. I know Sherrard's one of those programs now with where they're at. They want to try to get some of those games. I know they're looking forward to the game with West Hancock on Saturday. So, all right, I'll talk to Coach Johnson about that and see if we can get something in the works.
Sounds great.
All right. So, want to remind our listening audience, you know, supporting this individual here by the name of Aaron Britton. You can follow him on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. It's @Nesto Hoops. And if you love high school basketball across this great state of Illinois, he is the main person you need to follow. Again, @Nesto Hoops on X. And why is that, Ty Taylor? People should follow him?
Because he cares, and he does, I mean, hours and hours and hours. I can't even imagine the time that he puts in doing this. And it's a great service for everybody. You know, like my dad said, if you just want to follow basketball, there's information for every team, every result in the state, state rankings every week too. It's a great resource. The spreadsheet's one of the, I mean, I use it daily almost, you know, getting ready for broadcast and everything. So yeah, I can't endorse Nesto's coverage enough. He does an incredible job, and we're really appreciative he took some time to talk with us today.
Hey, I have one other question for you, Aaron Britton, because you were talking about the 815, and I thought it was interesting. Last week, one of the teams at the Sherrard Holiday Tournament was East Dubuque. Yeah. And I was talking to their head coach, and I have not seen Pecatonica play, and I know they've just been steamrolling teams, and I think Matt Heels, the head coach of Byron, said, man, they're legit, and Byron plays them in late January. And by the way, Byron will be one of the top teams in 2A next year. They start all under classmen, a really legit, I think, team to watch out for even as the season progresses. I know there's so much love for NUIC football, and deservedly so. They get great attention, but man, What's happening with NUIC basketball? And you look at this, kind of comes off of, you know, what Scales Mound has done the last couple of years. Is it surprising to you that basketball is reaching that level in that part of the state that has always been known as, you know, such football country?
I mean, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but it is. It's nice to see, because like you said, when I moved up here in 2008 and Eastland was very good, and then Aquin was good to almost really great, but there was almost no depth in the conference at that point. And now every year it's like there's programs that are starting to stabilize success on top of success season after season. And yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but it's Peck in general is like in the midst of an athletic renaissance, because all their teams are good across all the sports. It's really amazing to see.
All right. Again, at Nesto Hoops on X, and I'm assuming we'll see him at one of our various gyms as the season progresses. If not, I know we'll see him at the state tournament in March. Nesto Hoops, Mr. Aaron Britton, keep up your great work. We love following you.
Pleasure is all mine, man.
And you're listening to WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Roush at WCCI in Savannah. He's Jim Taylor at WRMJ in Aledo, and we're Jim and Brian talking high school sports. Jim, happy new year as we head into 2025, and we'll have lots to talk about in the coming weeks, I'm sure.
Well, and we always continue to follow what's going on at the IHSA in different things that may impact our specific sports, and a lot of it deals with policy, procedure, bylaws, things of that nature. Now, one of the items that I saw that came out of the December IHSA board meeting, it was just a blurb that said the board reviewed and discussed a proposal from Moline High School and United Township High School to amend Policy 18 and certain elements to state series hosting and seeding in team bracketed sports. Now, I've heard some chatter as I've traveled this winter as it relates to regionals, subsectionals, sectionals, and one of the things I heard is potentially doing away with basically a regional format, and through the tournament trail, basically the higher seed would host until they would get to the sectional. There would be a true sectional complex still. What do you think?
is it good for the sport? You know, when we're talking about four class sports here and sports like baseball, softball, you know, basketball, those type of sports, is it good to do away with the traditional regional format, or would you still like to see that?
Well, I kind of like the regional format. I guess that maybe they're talking about, you know, travel situations and the like, and there's probably a whole variety of, ideas behind a potential change. But I guess because I'm old school, I kind of like that. You know, they introduced that kind of play-in game a number of years back in some of the sports where there is a home game for one of the teams. I'm okay with that, but I just think the regional just has a feel to it, whether it be on, you know, any of the sports on a diamond or on a court or wherever.
Yeah, and I know softball and volleyball may present softball and baseball may present some challenges when we talk about, you know, the postseason format as it relates to, you know, regionals, where I could see maybe playing at the higher seed until you get to the championship game. But I've always liked basketball playing the whole regional at that site. Now, since we went to this subsectional format, basically subsectionals defined as, you know, seeding two regionals, they've been playing just the regional semifinals and the championship game at the regional site. I really believe you're missing something by not still reverting back to the traditional regional format and having the whole thing at one site. I don't know. In terms of just maybe creating a little more interest, or maybe I'm just old school, but I wish they would do it, you know, the old fashioned way, and just have the whole regional at one site, especially for basketball.
Well, and I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I've adjusted to the play-in game, but I could see it go away and not be upset. But I'm thinking that, boy, you put a lot of advantage to the home court. If two teams are evenly matched and say it's the round that would be a regional final, to know that the higher seed would be at home, that seems a little bit like an advantage. Now, sometimes I know teams win regionals on their home floor, but most of the time it's on a neutral site, and I kind of like that idea. And not to get all carried away here, but if you decide to do that in basketball and give a series of home games, then let's do away with the football format and have it be like the NFC and AFC playoffs. Higher seeds home until they get knocked out.
And I know there are a lot of people that agree with that. And I think what I've also heard as it relates to kind of seeding moving forward within these these sectional complexes, you know, they've been seeding the subsectionals. Again, that's basically two regionals. But I've heard a lot of chatter about, hey, let's seed the whole sectional complex and divide the schools up that way. I think you can do that, because so many people talk about travel, but travel's only an issue if you keep on winning. You know, travel's not an issue for the losing school. So I would like to maybe see the entire sectional seated, but still having, you know, those regional locations where you have that same regional site the whole week. I don't know if that's something that can be accomplished when we're talking about geography, but maybe there's a mesh point in all that, and we'll have to see. Do you think it's a possibility to seed the entire sectional, or is geography just too much to deal with that?
Well, I think you'd have to have some, maybe switch outs available due to geography, and say, you know, hey, we can switch this seed for that seed because it makes better sense geographically. But yeah, I think that's the one thing. And, you know, I think about, you know, regionals now, where teams talk about driving past one or two other sites to get to the site where they're playing. I don't think there's a perfect system, no matter how hard you try or how much you put into it. I think, you know, I like where we're at right now. Why not stay?
He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Toledo. This is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
All right, the WDMJ Sports Line, winding things down on this Saturday morning. We do have programming coming up this afternoon. High school basketball from the Carl Sandburg Poetry Shootout as the Sherrard Tigers get a crack at the Titans of West Hancock. That's Warsaw, Nauvoo, Colusa, and Hamilton down in West Central Illinois. Now, Mercer County plays at West Hancock later this year. Do you know
Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
Yes.
What is the venue? Do they play in Nauvoo? Do they play in Hamilton? Or do they play in Warsaw?
I believe it's Hamilton, I think. But is that where they play that? Yeah.
All right. Because I did a football game.
I did a football game in Hamilton, and there's not a less fun place to drive to. That is a miserable, from Aledo to Hamilton is not a fun drive.
I like the Hamilton football field, though, because a part of it's in the baseball field,
yes,
right?
It is.
It's like the old Jack Murphy Stadium.
And you broadcast from a press box that's right on top of the field, and you are in the very corner of the press box. So you're on the 20-yard line on the one side, and none of the field is striped or numbered. There's no numbers on any yard line, so it's...
And it's a very old, rickety press box that sways
yes, it is.
Back and forth.
We love doing games in the track. I'll just put it that
way. I liked kind of the one year I did West Hancock, the game was in Warsaw in football. And I remember it was the first game of the year, so it was August, and there was no water that was utilized on that field, and it was just a yellow color. Orion played down there. I'll never forget it. Ask Chip Filler about it. He'll tell you the truth. So we've traveled many a roads. So we'll have that today. Then next week, pretty good big showdown game, I think, kind of getting a feel of what the central portion of the state is all about. Rockridge plays Bloomington Central Catholic. Now, I think that game will be weather permitting, not because of here, but because to the south of us, they're supposed to get upwards of 4 to 8 to 10 inches of snow. So we'll see if they'll be able to make the trip up this way Tuesday.
Also Monday, we have a girls game. Sherrard plays at Monmouth Roseville.
Oh, that'll
both
be a big one.
3-0 in the conference. So yeah, they're playing for first place in the league.
All right. Anything else today?
I don't think so. You mentioned Mercer County. They play at West Hancock Wednesday. They play at Macomb Tuesday. So they make back-to-back trips way. And earlier in the year, they made back-to-back trips to Fulton and Morrison.
Yeah, so this is their Hancock County swing. Those
games will all be home, though.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good luck to Coach and Coach Seedam in talking about kind of their schedule. You know, when they made the conference move here this year, and we were talking to him, in the off season, and when he mentioned the schedule, much respect to him.
Oh yeah,
they put together a really
good
schedule.
A brutal schedule.
But you got to play that type of schedule, and As this young team gets better, hopefully it benefits them.
It will.
Heading toward
it
next
will.
Year. Yep. All right, the other thing, any news on the football position in Mercer County? Because they're talking about a January hiring.
They're hiring in January.
So the...
That's in a couple of weeks.
2 weeks from Wednesday.
Yep.
So we haven't heard...
Not much, really. Like I said, I haven't really asked around. I guess maybe
well, Justin Murray
week.
Walked by here today. We should have grabbed him and said, who are the names?
I'll try to figure or talk about that maybe next week. We can look into if, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're going to hire, like I said, in whatever couple weeks in January. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's been a whole ton of interest in, like, in terms of getting people to apply for that job because, like we talked about a few weeks ago, it's just, you know, you're taking over a program that is in disarray from what happened this past year. And now, like we talked about too, this is not a team or a program that is just an automatic playoff team every year anymore with being out of the Lincoln Trail and in the track. Now you have to actually earn your way into the playoffs. And that's something that they haven't had to do in 20 years, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, I don't know. We'll see, I guess. I mean, there's obviously a very proud tradition of Aledo / Mercer County football, but you know, in recent years, they've really struggled in terms of, like, beating good teams. I mean, I don't know if they've beat a good team in 10 years in football. I mean, you know what I mean. So.
Yeah. All right. Did you ask one more question? Did you ask Mark Bam Postownik, former IHSA state champion? You got to ask him about – I told you on the air, I texted you, ask him about Jude Finch. Has he seen Jude Finch wrestle or not?
I didn't see him after the game. You should have texted me that before the game.
Yeah.
I don't know. He went to UT, though.
Bam?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a solid, unbelievable high school wrestler, like a 98-pounder.
When I showed up, he was showing me where to broadcast from, and he mentioned Tom and Sheila Taylor.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. He was he lived for a short time on 4th Street.
Yep, that's what he said. He said, I grew up right by your parents' or your grandparents' house.
Yeah. All right, well, great to have Nesto on, and always great to – everybody's like, is his name really Nesto?
No, it's
Aaron Redden!
Yeah.
But if you – you know, are new to this and maybe you're just listening today and you like, you know, high school basketball or whatever. And I mean, this is the guy that knows, like if you're a person that complains about why can't I find the whatever score? Well, get on Nesto Hoops the next morning and you can find every score to your heart's desire wherever. And that's why I love the work.
So
he does.
If you want to know like the Earlville versus
Leland
Ashton Franklin Center score, you got it. You got it if you want to know it.
All right. Well, fun game today coming up. I'll be listening. West Hancock and Sherrard, go Tigers.
Yes.
It's a big measuring stick game today. And it should be a wild environment in that place, man, with how small that gym is. And hopefully a lot of purple and gold. And if you can't make it, of course, you can listen to the game on the airwaves or of course, you can listen to the game when you're down in the Carl Sandburg gym.
My uncle said he's going to be listening on his way home from the game he's officiating in Rock Falls today.
Which game is he doing?
The noon game. I forget who it is. It's Kewaunee and somebody.
Okay. Maybe. All right. And Mercer County plays Siri Prophetstown up there
this afternoon.
Today.
Yep.
And then is the girls' basketball shootout next week at Augie, right?
Yes. And we'll have Sherrard there. They play North Scott.
And that'll be a marquee matchup. And hopefully Illinois fares a little bit better in the girls' basketball shootout than the boys' basketball.
Yeah, well, the top two games were won by the Illinois schools. Yeah. And UT and Pleasant Valley played a one-point game that PV beat them in. But, yes, the bottom half of the Illinois side of the Illinois-Iowa shootout in boys is not good.
Well, they need to get some of our area schools out.
I've always said, like, the last 10 years.
Because they draw well,
too. The last 10 years, Rock Ridge should have been in that field instead of, like, Alleman, you know. I mean, especially the last, like, 5 years, especially.
And then Alleman should be in the track. Nah, just kidding. That's we'll have that conversation at some other point. All right. Well, that'll do it for the WMJ Sportsline. Again, Tigers of Sherrard taking on the Titans of West Hancock. Broadcast time again today.
3:30.
And then we'll have Illini basketball. They're still out west playing Washington tomorrow in a trap game. What time is that game at college?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock broadcast.
It's crazy, by the way, before we wrap up, that those are conference games. Illinois at Oregon, Illinois at Washington. Isn't that wild?
Nah, it's crazy. Yeah. I like it, though. It seems to be a good fit for Illinois.
Yeah.
Ha-ha.
Yeah.
And then Iowa gave up like 1,000 points to Wisconsin in men's college basketball last
night. There's not a lot of defense there. And, I mean, it was like 100, what was it, 115 or something? They were in like was up over 110. I forget the exact score, but geez.
What's the most points I think Wisconsin ever scored in a basketball game?
Yeah, because they don't play that way. They're normally methodical, and oh my gosh.
All right, for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.